Hey there, folks. Welcome to the first podcast. This is Pogo here, and with me today, I've got Timothy from Curator. Say hello, Timothy.
Hey, everyone.
We've got the amazing Lars, who's the host of this show. How you doing, buddy?
Hi, Nick.
And we have Joe. Say hello, Joe.
Hey, guys. It's me, your co-host, Joe. Thanks for joining us, Nick and Tim.
Likewise.
Hey, thanks
very much
for having us.
Thank you for doing me the honors. I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Sorry, none of us do. We're doing fine.
Nick was actually the first guest on our show way back in August 2018, and it has come quite a long ways. I'm excited to have you back on, bud.
Oh, likewise, man. Thanks. How's it going so far?
Well, I think when we first asked you to come on, we had about 11 listens to the show, and now we're at 40,000, what?
We just hit 41,000.
Wow.
Yeah. A bit of a bigger operation. I think there's, what, like 100 people tuning in right now?
Oh, that's
amazing. Something like that.
How does that feel on the inside?
It feels like, it feels really good. It's been
stupid question.
Quite a journey. I still feel like we're totally like rookies with this, but like it does feel good to have like people tune into this and stuff now. It's
yeah.
And we are on better mics as well. And
upgrades.
Yeah. All kinds.
On the Blue Yetis.
I really regret the microphone I was using on your first episode. I sound like shit.
I think so. I thought it sounded good. Because I heard it back on the iTunes stream and I thought it was great.
Well, thank you, Nick.
Did you do something to it?
No, just my mic was a lot shittier back then.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, okay, so a bunch of people who are tuning into this are already going to know, but for like the 3 or 4 people in the universe who have never heard of Pogo, can you go ahead and give us the 15-second pitch for who you are and what you do?
I'd say there's a lot more people than that, but I basically look through a movie for sound effects, voices, and chord samples, and anything that sounds good, and then I just put them all out on a grid and try to create songs with those sounds that hopefully captures the spirit of that movie. I suppose that's as much as I can dumb it down.
And Tim, can you do the same as well?
Yeah. No worries. I'm Tim. They call me Tim the Curator. My company is called Curator. We are working on releasing the remastered soundtracks of some beautiful Humongous Entertainment games. Pajama Sam 3, which you heard a newly remastered excerpt from, that was Top Banana by the Fat Man and Team Fat. By the way, the Fat Man, composer for Putt-Putt, Freddy Fish, Pajama Sam, is in our chat right now as Fatty. If you have any questions for him.
Wow, that's awesome.
Hello, Fatty.
Hey, Fatty.
He's in here. He's in here. That's the Honorable George Sanger, good friend of mine, wonderful guy, and just a awesome presence. But yeah, so I've been working on the music of Humongous Entertainment, which is a big, huge Kickstarter. We want to put this music on vinyl and CD and digital formats, and it launches tomorrow. And I got in touch with Nick, who's just awesome as a fan of what he did, and wondered if we could do something together. We did, and that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about today.
Timothy, how long have you been working on this, man? Because we were talking about this years ago.
Yeah, I think you and I started talking between 3 and 4 years ago, and I've been working on this since May of 2013, so over 6 years.
Damn.
And actually, fun point about that was I actually found a forum post from when I was 15, 11 years ago, describing this project. I was looking for help trying to extract the music out of the games in order to make a Humongous Entertainment soundtrack collection. So this work has been a weird part of my life and a big part of my life for a very long time.
That's insane. It's like, it's good insane.
Yeah, and it's all sort of culminated to this moment.
I think so. Yeah, this is a very real place we've gotten. And like Nick said, we've been talking about our little collaboration for a long time in and of itself. So it's really awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I was getting strong Duke Nukem Forever vibes from that project, but it looks like it actually is coming together at this point.
Yeah, dude, I agree. No, I hear what you mean. And I think a lot of people would have been very fair to say, yeah, this is never going to happen. And I think it is. We'll see if the Kickstarter is successful. But at the very least, we've given it a damn good college try.
And apparently you're launching the Kickstarter for this tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, yeah, we've got probably around noon or 1 o'clock tomorrow. People, by the way, I want to clarify for people in the chat. People are asking if we already played Pogo's track. No, we didn't. We just played an excerpt from Pajama Sam 3, just for fun, some jazz.
Yeah. Also, a couple of people are saying, what if someone's here for just for Pogo and not for the putt-putt stuff? But those two things are very much intertwined in this case.
Yes. Yeah. And we'll keep it. We'll try to keep it to relevant stuff about just the Pogo story, guys, has been really neat. Pogo, Nick, I don't even know how much you know about how you got the audio you did, but that could be one place to start. What's your, and Joe, Lars, interrupt me if necessary, but Nick,
blah, 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 interrupt.
What's your recollection? I have something to say. That was a dumb invitation on my part. What's your side of our story? Like, how did this go from your perspective?
Well, yeah, Tim, you asked me if we could make a remix of Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo.
Right.
And my first thought was, well, damn, the sound quality in these CD-ROM games from the 90s is terrible. Remember back in 95, you know, you didn't have a lot of data on that disc, so they had to crush that sound right down. And right. Muppet's Treasure Island, Escape from Horrorland, and of course the Putt-Putt games, they all have this problem of severe bit crushing.
Yeah.
And so I thought, right. Well, I don't know, man, like, how's this going to work? And then Timothy, being the crazy, crazy man that he is, emails me one day and says, Nick, I've got this box of cassette tapes on which we have the entire studio recordings of the voice actors for Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo. Tim, how the hell did you track this down?
So it only happened because you asked me, which is I find really, really neat. So I reached out to you. I was just a big fan of you, and I was putting together this project years ago and was thinking, okay, what are some good promotional avenues that could be really fun to explore? And I reached out to you and you asked me, you said, hey, yeah, okay, maybe we could do something. The dialogue is great. These are some great voices, but we've got this bit crushing. Mm. What is there any chance we could find the original dialogue recordings? And I was like, I mean, no, there's no real possibility. But I thought, well, yeah, I'm kind of crazy and I'm willing to at least ask. So I was having a lot of fun visiting the original studio where the dialogue for Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo happened. It's in Seattle. It's called Bad Animals. And I stopped by there a couple times and got to know the staff there. I was just kind of exploring Humongous's history and looking at what I could do with it all. And I wound up getting in touch with the voice actor who originally played Putt-Putt as a child, Jason Ellefson. He's like in his mid-30s now. He played Putt-Putt when he was like 7 to 12 years old. And I found his acting reel on YouTube. Sent him an email and said, hey, do you want to record some new stuff as promotional stuff for this Kickstarter in a few years? And he said, sure. And we worked it out with his agent, and I wound up flying him out from Vegas to that studio. Before I got there, you asked me that question about the dialogue. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going anyway. Why don't I call them and ask? And I asked them, I said, hey, is there any chance you still have those sessions? And they said, well, no. That would actually be illegal because we're not allowed to hold on to any of this kind of audio. It's not ours. Mm. We're not allowed to hold on to any of this kind of audio for more than a year after it's recorded. And I said, okay, all right, fine. I just was checking, whatever. So I didn't email you back because I still had this hope that, like, oh, maybe it could happen. And I got there. Jason and I and the original director and the original recording engineer were all in the booth. And Tom McGurk, who also recorded and produced the soundtrack for Spy Fox 2, Freddy Fish 2, Freddy Fish 3. He's also an Emmy Award-winning recording engineer for Bill Nye the Science Guy. He did tons of the music and sound effects for that show. He's a really awesome dude. He walks into the booth, into the control room, and says, hey, I don't know how we have these, but I found the original script and all these digital audio tapes, DATs, from Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo in particular. Hmm. Like, we don't have anything else like this.
It's crazy.
But just this game that you asked about. So it seems like it's meant to be. They're all yours. And everybody got to watch me have like an emotional breakdown in the control room because I was so excited. It was really, really awesome. And then it took us a long time to get them processed and digitized. And then I sent it off to Nick and he got to hear, these original lines.
You had to find a tape deck, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We had to work. A friend of mine and I, really, really great friend, who's working on like 3D scans right now of every tape. He's really big into preservation. We had to find a tape deck. Then we had to digitize lines. Then I spent like 3 weeks listening to all these thousands of lines, like, I don't know, 11 hours of audio or something, and cutting every individual line that appeared in the game distinct from all the takes of those same lines that didn't go into the game. And I collected all those, sorted them according to performer and context, and then sent that to Nick in the hope that he could make some magic, and he sure as hell did. So before we got started, somebody asked, what the hell did I do that had to do with the track? That was my end.
And by the way, people ask that in the recording chat, which you can tune into these episodes live at discord.t1podcast.com. Joe, what's that URL?
discord.t1podcast.com. Now, I actually have a question for you, Tim.
Yes.
How did you distinguish the lines that appeared in the game and the ones that didn't? You're just listening closely, like, oh, I recognize that line.
It was all by ear. Yeah, I'm pretty good at that in the first place. I grew up listening to a lot of radio shows, and I love dialogue. I love just voices and the very unique elements of everyone's individual voice. So I got to exercise that by, listening very closely to, okay, wait a minute, that's the take that I've heard in the game so many times. And
it's amazing when you listen to the tapes as well, because every time one of the voice actors gives a line, it's immediately followed up by the lady whose job it is to direct the kids. So the kid will say, I can almost see the zoo from here. And then the lady goes, no, I can almost see the zoo from here. And then the kid tries it that way. And it's really interesting. Tim, you put up photos of these guys actually in the studio, right?
Toby, now's not a good time. I'm recording a podcast, please.
Uh-oh.
Sorry, my dog.
Joe, get your dog in order.
Toby, please, not now.
Is that Pep?
By the way, you put together some clips of that. Should we go ahead and play that?
Sure, man. Yeah, we should. These are the kids, some of the kids, and I think one of the adults, sort of messing up their lines or having fun with it, because these were relatively long recording sessions, and there was a lot of fun had there. So yes, this is just a minute out of those original recording sessions, and you guys are the first to hear them.
That sure's a humongous TM pile of snow.
Pile of snow is good.
The next time I go swimming, I don't think it will be so... Oh, gosh.
Hello, Putt-Putt. Have you opened up the dam yet?
Mommy, she said that word.
It's okay, honey. It's Squidgy, and she's allowed.
Now I can visit Kenya anytime I come back to the Cartown Zoo. Sorry, ran out of breath.
I sure am. I mean, I... Ever... Lila...
You made it!
Excuse me. I need a drink real quick.
I rescued all of the... Like, you're too much more... Yeah. I rescued all of the missing animals!
So yeah, that's them.
Children's failure.
Wow. Oh my goodness. One of them, it had the beep, and it sounded like it was like bleeping out a cuss word or something.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Now, Jason and I actually got to do that. Nick, you asked if I had like photos of these guys in the booth. I have one of Jason, Putt-Putt, very young, with Lori, the director. But I also have video of Jason 2 years ago with Lori, the director, in that studio. And it was actually the day before they recorded Super Mario Odyssey in the same room.
Wow.
Which was kind of weird.
That is weird.
Just coincidence. Man. But yeah.
It's all happening in that neck of the woods. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, the Charles Martinet, the voice actor for Mario, that's where they do all their stuff at that studio.
Wow. He did Parthenax for Skyrim as well.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, the dragon on top of the mountain.
Yeah, they've...
That is versatility, man.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a good dude.
Speaking of good dudes, by the way, I think, Joe, we should go ahead and knock out our first sponsor. Our first sponsor is Amazon the website.
Just a little old site called Amazon. That's right. We're all Amazon affiliates.
Joe, if people wanted to go ahead and help the show in a way in which they're not spending any extra money, because we know they're going to spend money on Amazon as it is.
We know it. We know they're going to spend money on Amazon. So to answer your question, Lars, they would go to amazon.t1podcast.com. And from there, they can buy their tchotchkes and their gizmos and gadgets and widgets. And a portion of it will go to us to help make the show bigger and better. And it's at no added cost to the viewer.
Yeah, guys, you're going to shop at Amazon. Might as well do it at amazon.t1podcast.com. It helps the show and it helps you get the products that you want.
Might as well bookmark that link right now. We know you have Amazon bookmarked.
Do it now.
Do it now. Do it.
Well, calm down, Joe. Let's just. All right. Nick, I have a question for you. And that question is, what else have you been up to since we last talked?
I'm trying to just keep creative, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm very sorry. That's actually my alarm for this show. And I'm late. I'm sorry. There you go. I've been keeping incompetent. There you go.
No worries.
No, because, okay, for the sake of the audience, there was a miscommunication in which Nick thought we were recording an hour later than we actually were. And, you know, it's like he lives in Australia, so it's like it's understandable that there could be some mixed signals there, and that's why that was happening. Anyway.
Yeah, it gets a little confusing living in the middle of nowhere, so I'm sorry.
No worries, man.
But, you asked what's been going on since our first podcast. I put up a video of Bambi. We did a mix of Bambi not too long ago. That was good fun. Actually, that was in the How to Remix Movies video. I'm really trying hard to finish something for The Simpsons as well, because Ooh. There's a lot of folks... asking the big question, where's the Simpsons remix? And so that's a big one. Actually, another reason I'm in contact with Timothy is because the man is so talented at networking and pulling up all of these, you know, cassettes and files from all of these old games. And one of the old games that I really want to work with at some point is the first Sims game.
Yeah.
Mm.
Timothy, you were telling me the other day how wouldn't it be amazing if they could push out like the original music on vinyl for the Sims game.
That's right. Yeah. I was at an airport and listening to a wonderful jazz youth orchestra, just a little, I think it was like a quintet. And it reminded me of how great that music is. And yeah. Of course, gentlemen, we talked a little bit about this last time I was here too.
Yeah, we did.
But yeah, Nick and I are both people passionate about that music and the atmosphere of that game. I've been in touch with Jerry Martin, the wonderful composer of the original Sims, and EA is going to be quite the monolith to approach. But my hope is this Kickstarter tomorrow, and you know, with Nick's help and everything we're doing, will get us on the map enough to have that conversation. Because he has all of it. I asked him. It was so exciting. And he dropped it like it was nothing. But I was on the phone with Jerry and I asked him, hey, so just out of curiosity, do you still have all of that? Do you have like the voice files and the sound effects and stuff? He said, oh, yeah. Yeah, it's all right here.
Wow.
Like he said, I could see it from like where I am right now. Yeah, it's all on this hard drive right here. I was like, oh, really? That's great. Yes, I think that should go on vinyl or something.
You've kind of done the same thing with Pod Pod Saves the Zoo, because you didn't just send me the stems of the vocalists in the recording booth, but I've actually got here, like, I've got FLAC files that are like six channels.
Yeah.
And on the one channel, you've got a guitar, you've got another guitar, you've got one singer, you've got another singer. And this is from 95, man.
Yeah.
Like how the hell did you track this down?
It's all just a lot of asking questions and becoming friends with people. That is the courtesy. I don't know if Fatty, oh yes, he is. George is still here in the chat and he's just awesome.
Hey, Fatty.
And it's really like it's great that I was able to track this stuff down, but there's got to be so much credit, especially in George's case, when it comes to the putt-putt music and stuff. He did so much to archive his stuff, to make sure that it was preserved for someone as crazy as me to come along and make use of it one day. 6 years ago in May, when I got started with all this, I heard a sample of Welcome to the Zoo uncompressed on his website. And I was like, I sent him an email and I just said, hey, do you have all this? Is there more of it? And his reply was, yeah, I have it. And maybe one day it'll come out in some kind of nicely organized format, but it would basically take the right person. And I just wondered if I was the right person. And yeah, I was 20 and crazy and looking for something to do. And this became my thing. So anyway, it's been a real joy, Nick, to share this with you. And my question for you is, what was putting this track that everybody's going to hear like?
Wait. But we're the interviewers here.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to hear about this myself. So, hey, if you
okay,
got a better
so
question.
Nick, Nick, what was putting this track together like?
Hold on. I haven't asked enough questions that... Nick, what was putting this track together like?
It was just so exciting putting this together because, you know, like Tim's been saying, the vocal recordings are in pristine quality. You know, this is not the sound that you heard in the game. This is straight from the studio. Well, I mean, it's on cassette, but still, it's like it's pristine. Mm. And you can hear like the pages turning in the studio and you can hear the director in the background. And it's just this. Tim's gone to the amazing extent of labeling each file with the line spoken in that file. So like I can almost see the zoo from here, dot wave or dot flack. And it's made me rethink how I work because I don't save my samples like that. I save them as like 12 dot wave or V underscore 12 dot wave. And that's useless when it comes to editing the video.
Yeah.
So Timothy, you've actually improved my workflow, man. I owe you a beer.
Oh, hey, I'm glad to hear it. It was at the time, it was still uncertain whether this was going to happen at all, just for a multitude of reasons. So it was a big experiment to see like, okay, if I can make this as easy as possible, is it going to pay off? Let's see what happens. And it's been great. It's been really fun.
Okay. Joe.
Yes.
Did you have any questions? Because I just have like a multitude of ones that I want to ask our elegant, esteemed guests, but I wanted to give you a chance to get a word in.
Well, Pogo, I just want to say I'm a big fan.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
Yeah. Any specific questions. I normally kind of bounce off of what everyone else is saying and...
Oh, excuse me.
Oh geez.
maybe my question that I'm wondering the most would be like, do you have a creative process? Like you always have like a hot cup of tea or like all the windows need to be closed or like what do
oh,
you
Oh yeah. That's a good question.
Do you always
Great
do you,
question, Joe.
Always work at 2 a.m. like anything like that?
I don't know. As I'm getting older, because I'm climbing into my 30s now, I'm an old man.
Yeah.
And 31. I'm actually finding that I don't like waiting for inspiration. I think that's kind of a cop-out, and it's not a great thing to depend on. So I don't... there is a creative process, sort of, but I think what's more important is like your daily routine.
Mm.
So in the morning, you know, you want to have a glass of water the moment you wake up, and then you want to have shower, you want to have a healthy breakfast, you know, you want like protein, you want fruit, you want nuts. I just make a smoothie because I can't be asked making breakfast. and then I go for like a walk. And I find that after that whole sort of ritual, I've just got loads of confidence and energy and it just feels great. And most of my 20s, I was hopeless at routine. I would, you know, creativity would come and then it would go because I didn't have a routine. I would spend most of my time playing Red Dead Redemption or Skyrim and, you know, I just wasn't putting out content. So I thought, how can I change this? So I suppose that's kind of the process is changing your lifestyle to be healthier and to be more structured.
Hmm.
Okay.
Hmm. It's not something I've thought about nearly enough, actually.
Hmm.
Do you guys find the same? I don't know. Am I just this new agey kind of mystical weirdo or?
No.
I find that routine is helpful.
Yeah, we've kind of gotten into the routine of recording on Wednesdays, for example. It seems small, but having a set schedule for your productivity, it gets you doing stuff. And apathy is like a serious problem that you can run into when it comes to creative works. So I would tend to agree with that.
How do you combat that, though? Because everyone here, I'm sure, has encountered writer's block, quote unquote. Like, what is your strategy for breaking through that wall?
Well, I can tell you from a podcaster's perspective.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of force myself to because I'm the editor for this podcast as well. And if I don't release the episodes, you know, we lose the faith of the public trust. Like people don't want to tune in anymore because we're not going to like get the episodes out on time. People are expecting interviews to come out and stuff. So kind of committing to doing these recordings and saying, oh, they're going to be out such and such a time. Like I actually have a release schedule on our website, which we adhere to like 99% of the time. So basically putting it out there has helped for me. I know for some people, they get into like this weird cycle where they say something where like, oh yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to lose weight or I'm going to finally make that YouTube channel, and they announce it to the world and they don't do it. But that is what has worked for me.
So like accountability there.
Yeah, to some extent, yeah. Joe, what about you?
I just wanted to quickly say that Fatty from the chat, who we brought up earlier, who works with Tim, says that you work hard, Nick, and it's very inspiring. So I wanted to make sure that's on record.
Oh, geez, thanks so much, man. That means everything, geez.
He's great.
Yeah, wow.
Nick, you have a very soothing and enjoyable voice, but you just sounded super sarcastic because of that. You're like, wow, thanks, man. That's so great.
Thank you.
I heard the sincerity.
All right.
Well, Nick, no, I'm glad you mentioned what you did. That's actually been my path recently as well, is just finding routine and discipline more and more. Somebody once said, I only write when I'm inspired, and I make sure I'm inspired every day at 9 a.m.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's that. You were talking about Amazon earlier. I've actually been into my Amazon books because I got a Kindle for my birthday. I was super, super lucky. And I've been pouring through these books. And there's this one book called Turning Pro by Stephen Pressfield. And he describes the difference between an amateur and a professional being that an amateur waits for inspiration and a professional sits down and reels it in every single day.
Yeah,
it's not just that the one works in an office, the one works at home. It's like the whole mindset of, I'm in this for keeps. I'm not in this for fun.
Right.
Like I'm playing this game to beat resistance and procrastination every day.
Right.
I would agree with that.
It's,
also,
it's hard, man. It's
I love
lately.
It.
Yeah. This is going to kind of sound super lame.
Well, then don't say it.
Well, it's relevant. Nick, do you know what TikTok is?
Yes, I do.
I feel like
he's about to make the world's worst flex. Oh my god!
I'm not flexing. I'm not flexing. But so I feel like TikTok is a junior content creating device. But I made a video that went viral, and then a couple more that went viral, and I got like 5,000 followers, which is not much.
Joe, tell him how many views you get a week on TikTok.
A couple million.
Do you really?
The past week or two, yeah, I've been getting like a million.
Shit.
A week.
It's vile.
Oh my god.
what are the videos, if you don't mind me asking?
Mostly I go to Disneyland and I do like joke reviews of the bathrooms. I'll go like, hey guys, everyone's been asking me to review the Fantasyland bathrooms. You know, they're clean, they have water fountains to keep you hydrated. 10 out of 10. Excellent bathrooms. It's just these stupid videos.
I need to see these.
Wow.
But
really, really important content he's creating is what he's saying.
Hey, so people like it. People are weird.
Consistency is very important, I think. So if I go like more than a couple of days without putting out these stupid videos, I feel like I'm losing momentum. So I go to Disneyland where I know that I can walk around and find something to make a video about. And then while I'm there, I do find something and I just make the video. I just drag my ass to either Disneyland or the mall or anywhere.
That's fascinating.
I'll just go somewhere where I can create the stupid content.
Very
unique. It can't be that stupid if you're getting, what is it, a million a week?
Yeah, at least for the past couple of weeks. I don't know how long it's going to last, but I've been getting a couple hundred new followers a day. Like, jeez, a million a week.
Wow, man. Yeah. You're doing better than all of us.
No, not really. Jeez. I mean, it doesn't really count because it doesn't really count. But that's my routine. You just force yourself to be consistent. I don't know who's on the app. I know that 75% of my followers are female. I don't know the age.
Oh. Hey-o.
Ooh, Joe's quite the heartbreaker.
Doing well, son. No. Good work, right, brother.
Is that a TikTok thing or is that a Joe thing, though?
We gotta run more tests.
Good question.
Need more data.
If I had to guess, I would say it's mostly girls that are following guys, and it's mostly guys that are following girls, I would assume.
Probably, yeah.
That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah, because if I was a guy who was on TikTok, I wouldn't want to follow a bunch of dudes.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, hey, Nick, so Tej is trying to alert us to the fact that your music is widely featured on TikTok. Right? Living Island is apparently quite a mimetic trend there. Yeah, I don't know anything about this, but apparently it's true.
Yeah, the internet has kind of dubbed her Elf Girl, and she's, I don't know how much you guys are into your anime, but she's basically this living anime creature, and the way she does it is she gets this like 5-second excerpt of a song, she lip syncs to it in slow motion, doing like all these gestures, and then she speeds it up, and it looks uncanny. It's like she's this living anime girl.
Interesting.
God knows how many hundreds of thousands this girl has reaped in. I actually think she's pulled out now. She didn't like the publicity.
But she was using Living Island for this?
Yeah, she was using the Living Island track, I think. Yeah, I got a lot of hits on my channel because of this girl, so I'm extremely grateful.
So you really have her to thank.
I do, yeah. I don't know how to get in
contact
with her.
She's the reason for your success, is what you're saying. Okay, makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
She has propelled your career to new and greater heights, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, maybe, man, maybe. Who knows?
Speaking of heights, you continue to test new methodologies for your videos and more green screen and stuff. Absabloom, I thought, turned out great.
Thank you.
What was doing that like? And do you have any plans for more live action stuff in the future?
Yeah, a lot of the remixes are of cartoony stuff, a lot of Disney stuff, and I've always thought, wouldn't it be cool to actually be in those videos, green screened, kind of lip syncing along to the words. Someone made the comment to me the other day that me being in the vid helps people to see what the lyrics kind of are.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you've got cartoon mouths, it's like, you know, it's either open or closed, really. But yeah, it's a lot of fun because I've set up this little green screen in my lounge, and then the idea is to comp myself into the scenes of the film that I'm remixing. So I've got to sit there for a couple of hours trying to remake the lighting conditions and stuff, and that's a lot of fun.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know where I was going with that, sorry.
Sure, that's all right. That's okay.
So, Timothy, when does your Kickstarter go up, man? Is that soon?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that is probably tomorrow between noon and 1 or so. And it's really exciting for me. Thanks for asking. If anyone's interested in Humongous Entertainment and the music thereof, we've got this one sort of moonshot that we're going for it. To release this music for the first time, the music of Pajama Sam 3, which is some great jazz, big band jazz. The first Freddy Fish, which is like sort of atmospheric surf rock, which is really interesting. And Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo, which is like children's music that's sort of inspired by locations all around the world. And then Spy Fox 2. Which is very Austin Powers-esque sort of 60s espionage brassy stuff. And it's all going to be released for the first time if we can succeed in our funding goal on vinyl. This gorgeous 4-LP set, 4-CD set, box set, and digital as well. So I think it's going to be really cool. I've been working on it for a long time. And just anybody who's interested, your support would be tremendously appreciate it. And Nick, thanks so much for helping get the signal out there. I think it's going to be worth it.
Oh man, it's been my absolute pleasure. It's been so much fun. And I think you've shown me previews of your Kickstarter page, and there's pictures of some of the stuff that you'll actually be producing. You've mentioned the vinyls.
That's right.
And it looks so beautiful. I don't even have a record player, but I need to have those in my hands.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah. What are you doing with the cover art? Have you gone back to the original illustration files?
Yeah, well, actually, so there's a mock-up on the Kickstarter page, and that uses, some of these just character vectors and just a mock-up that I put together. But I'm happy to say here, the hope is, and I think he's going to be willing to do it, to draw on a brilliant artist, Rafael Colanzo Jr., who was the original character designer for Pajama Sam. He put together Pajama Sam's look and also did these... Oh, just great design work for Humongous's Backyard Sports series. I want to reach out to him once it looks like the Kickstarter might be a serious success and say, hey, look, man, do you want to put together a whole new design using, you know, this original Humongous style that he's already so good at because he worked at the studio for a decade? Do you want to design the vinyl? And I have some new ideas for it, like a die cut in the back of the slipcase that shows the Humongous logo. And I've got a lot of really neat ideas that will have to wait until it's a lot closer to reality. But in the meantime, even the mock-ups, I think, look pretty damn good. So
absolutely.
I think this will be great.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
Can you do me a favor while this circus act goes by my house? Can you knock out the last sponsor ad real quick?
Yeah. So, thank you for tuning in. This has definitely been an episode to make history. in order to continue... God damn it. This is fucking
Jesus, Joe.
Hold on, I'll start over. Here, leave me in, Lars. Leave me in.
Okay. Go ahead and start again, Joe.
All right. Have you ever gone to Starbucks and you look across the way and there's somebody who's hacking into your computer? You ever go to the airport and you're not so sure about the Wi-Fi? You ever go on Netflix and you want to watch Le Bureau, which is French office, but you can't for no reason other than that you're not in France? Well, you need a VPN. And you need not just any VPN, but NordVPN. NordVPN is an award-winning piece of software that you can use both on your computer and your phone to protect yourself from the government, your internet service provider, the hacker across the street. NordVPN. It's what you need. It's only $3 per month. Go to nord.t1podcast.com and at checkout, the coupon code is THEFIRSTPODCAST. All one word, all words. Once again, that's nord.t1podcast.com, coupon code THEFIRSTPODCAST. Do you guys use a VPN?
Actually, no. No, I
well,
don't, but
should.
This sounds like a great one.
You should, yeah. It is great. Nord.t1podcast.com.
And that's going to do it for the ads for this episode. So now the rest is ad-free.
Ad-free for the rest of time.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do a hypothetical question.
Yeah, actually, I've been meaning to bust one out on you guys, and I it's been
out
a good
of context,
one.
Context, that sounds kind of weird.
Sex. Yeah. All right.
What do you got, Lars?
All right. And also, I do want to give you the opportunity to give one of your own if you like, because you're quite the gifted individual when it comes to that. But I do have one I'd like to bust out. Okay. So, and this is a question for both of you. What would be your useless superpower?
I would have the ability to make dry paint wet.
Well, what if you messed up the paint and you need to... No, that wouldn't.
Yeah, it's pretty useless, man. It's pretty useless.
Yeah, because if it's already on the wall, you probably wanted it to... And it's just because it's wet doesn't mean that you could take it off or anything or repaint. That's pretty useless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's a mess.
That's a damn useless power.
That is pretty
nicely
useless.
Done. Nicely done. Nick, what about you?
I think mine would be the ability to have as much beer as I want without getting wasted.
I like it.
So it like removes like the main purpose. It's just like,
it's just like drinking water, but it makes you dehydrated.
I'll be fine. I'll just get tipsy.
Yeah. I had like three beers right before at six before, and I was like, oh man, I just started chugging water as quickly as I could.
Oh.
So yeah, I that sounds kind of useful to me, actually.
Oh, you were going to show up drunk?
Are you wasted right now?
No, I'm good. Okay. I'm good. I'm hydrated.
Oh, I would say my useless superpower would be the ability to break my computer at will. Or just break it. Like, what? It's broken.
You already have that.
Yeah, you can just take a hammer to
you can just pitch it.
All right. How about the ability to make people that you consider your closest friends not want to be your friend anymore? I don't know.
You already can do that too, actually.
That's true. How about the ability
it has to be something you can't do.
Make all of your money disappear.
Dude.
But you won't receive anything for it?
You can do that too.
You can do that too. What are you talking about? That's true. Jesus Christ.
What about the ability to provide a great economic boost to a planet that you'll never visit outside of the solar system? And it's never, like, you can't.
What?
Yeah, like, there's, like, an alien planet and you can boost their economy.
Okay. All right.
Joe, why are you so bad at this after 70 episodes?
It's an interesting question, actually, because if we ever do set up civilization on the moon, and presumably most of the people on Earth aren't going to be living there, what's the situation with tax? How much of that tax is going to the new economy on the moon?
Yeah.
I feel like taxes would, they wouldn't need taxes. They would have...
Well, eventually they would. I mean...
Eventually.
These are the questions that keep me up at night, to be honest.
Well, and I don't know how much of taxation is a question of need. You know, it's just...
That's a deep question.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's an interesting premise, because I think that's where you're going to see a lot of corporate interest. You know, we have like the Coca-Cola Theater here on Earth already or whatever. I can't think of one. But we'll probably have like the Amazon colony on Mars.
What's the URL for that? Amazon.t1podcast.com.
Yes.
There
exactly.
we go.
Tying it right back in. Anyway, hey, so, we had a couple hypotheticals in the chat, one of which I was interested in.
Oh, fine.
I'm just going to draw on it for a second. If you could, somebody asked if there was a cartoon character you could make real and hang out with, who would it be?
Oh, Shrek for sure.
Ah, there you go.
that's the correct answer.
That'd be pretty cool. Yeah, I think that is it, actually. Nick, do you have any dissent?
It's got to be Homer Simpson.
Oh, yeah.
I'd pick his brain all day.
There you go. That'd be great.
Maybe Chris Griffin.
Why?
It seems fun. I don't know.
Seems pretty chill. Yeah.
All right. Tim, you want to flex out an actual question, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Let me see. What if I'm gonna have to think about this for a sec. Nick, have you got one? A hypothetical?
A hypothetical.
Will I boil for a sec? Something wild and wacky.
I kind of had one the other day, actually. It's to do with like Elmer Fudd and Bugs Bunny.
Okay.
If Bugs Bunny couldn't talk, would it not be like animal cruelty? Would it not be like against RSPCA regulations or some crap? Or is it the fact that he can talk that just makes it like, oh, it's okay now?
Yeah. That's okay. Do they suddenly become more, do those stories and cartoons become a lot more cruel if Bugs Bunny is robbed of the ability to speak? Interesting.
Yes.
I think there was an episode of Family Guy, by the way, where it wasn't that exact situation, but they had it so that Elmer like was chasing after Bugs Bunny And then he's like, yeah, what's up, Doc? And then Elmer Fudd, like, shoots him to shit, and he just, like, dies.
In oh, a yeah. Bloody mess. I think that was it.
He breaks his like neck.
Yeah, that was like a season 3 Family Guy bit. That was early. That was a Family Guy cutaway. I remember that.
Back when Family Guy was, like, even remotely good.
Exactly. Yeah. It was okay through, like, season 5.
If you guys could go back to any point in your life, like a save point, would you, is there some point where you would go back or would you not say?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Ooh. Thank you.
Told you I could ask good questions, Lars.
Do I retain my shit? Do I retain my maturity, my experience now? Or do I just become that Tim again?
That's a weird mix of maturity, experience, and shit.
You could choose, yeah, like, stuff. You could make like a small list of life lessons, and almost as if your higher self, if you would be like, these are the lessons that you need to go back.
Yeah, then hell no, I'm not going back. Forget that. Okay. No.
It can't be like, invest in Home Depot.
No, I earned my shit, as it were. I'm here. There's nothing good back there. Nothing better, anyway.
I agree.
What about you, Nick?
I'm at the top.
Well, it's kind of hard because, I know Hank Green put out a really good tweet a few years ago where he said, you've got no obligation to who you were yesterday. Like, you know, you're smarter this minute than you were the minute before. So it's kind of hard to look back on a point in my life where I'd want to go back because I know I'd be a hell of a lot stupider.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
A lot less experienced and a lot less grateful. So, but I don't know, exactly. Like, I think around the time I was 9, I was in a band and I was a drummer and we were doing talent quests in New Zealand. And that was a hell of a lot of fun because it was just like, hey, I've got this new sense of purpose. That was an amazing time for my life. That's probably when I'd go back is to when I'm like 8 or 9. You know, and you got the whole world in front of you. You got your whole life in front of you. You're as innocent as can be, and you've got nothing but what's ahead of you. So it's, I don't know, maybe that's a perspective thing, you know? Maybe that's just a cynical way of looking at things.
Yeah. By the way, I just wanted to point out real quick before we move on with the discussion. Nick, do you remember that you busted out that exact quote on your last episode?
Oh, really?
Right. That's interesting because Hank Green put out a tweet a while back, something to the effect of, you have no obligation to your former self.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. History repeats itself, man.
Yeah, well, no, it's true and it resonates with you deeply.
It remains relevant today.
I think a really good way of looking at life, I heard an analogy recently that I appreciated that was like, somebody gives you $100 and you waste $50 of it on candy. You spend $50 of it on candy today. Tomorrow, you might feel like you wasted $50, but in truth, you just have $50. You don't have $100, half of which is inaccessible to you.
Right.
You're just starting with whatever you've got now.
Yeah. It's that line between tying yourself to your past and just learning from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but exactly. Couldn't you use that to justify buying $50 of candy thinking, oh, well, tomorrow I'll just have $50.
Well, and you can. And actually, I mean, that's a good analogy, actually, because I think buying $50 of candy in particular is a perfectly reasonable choice. If that's what you want to do, just, go for it.
You know,
I don't know exactly why, but
that reminds me of a time in my life when I was in about 7th, 8th grade, and I was a short kid and I was kind of chubby. And I knew that at some point in the future, I was going to have a growth spurt and I was going to grow. So I didn't really have to watch what I ate and I didn't really have to like exercise. I could just grow and even out. So I kept eating junk food and my parents were like, you have to go on a diet. You're getting fat. And I just ignored them because I knew I was going to have a growth spurt. And then sooner or later I did and I evened out and I was right and fuck everyone else.
All right.
Just goes to show.
There you go.
On the topic of not being obligated to like your past self, do you guys have any sort of aspirations that you never really, that you've either lost interest in or you've just kind of, I don't know, like, is there something you wanted to be as a child that you you never realized. You never realized that vision. And yes. How do you think back on that?
Well, when I was really young, I wanted to be a taxi driver. And when I got older, I realized that was a stupid idea.
Right.
Okay. All right.
What about you, Tim?
Yeah, I was just thinking about this recently. I was actually talking with my sister about this. Doing this, honestly, doing this humongous project for 6 years and seeing it become already, even though we're not funded and who knows if we will be, but it's become so much more successful than I ever really dreamed. It's been amazing. And fostering a collaboration with you, Nick, has been just awesome. It's made me realize, oh, wow, like there were a lot of things I could have done. First of all, doing something risky and spectacular and based on a dream is a lot easier as a young person than an older person. And so I got started with most of this when I was 20. And thank God, because there's just no way I'd be able to fit all the learning that I did doing this in my early 20s. There's no way I'd be able to do that now. I don't think. So it got me thinking, oh, there were a lot of paths I could have gone down. Like if I could have gotten started with acting when I was 16, I could have, and there's still a lot of possibilities ahead of me, but I'm realizing, Nick, when I was a child, I really wanted to be an artist. That was my, what do you want to be when you grow up answer. And I have some real blocks in myself from courageously creating on my own and actually just fucking learning an instrument, pouring more time into visual arts, drawing, that kind of thing. So I'm thinking, oh, that's really the direction I want to go, because I can't imagine regretting pursuing that on my deathbed. I can definitely imagine regretting not. So
have you ever sort of had like a fear of failure? Have you ever been paralyzed by the idea of failing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. For long periods in my life. Honestly, I think that's part of why this humongous thing has taken as long as it has, is fighting that impulse. I've had to work with that for a long time. So luckily I'm seeing past it now, and I'm seeing the futility of it, and I'm seeing that life isn't about being or doing anything perfect. It's about an endlessly unfolding process, and it's full of opportunity if you're willing to just try shit out and see what happens.
Yeah, you've got to chase the madness, don't you? You can't get perfection. Because perfection is predictable, man. It's uninteresting. Same thing applies to any kind of art. You don't want to chase perfection. You want to be as mad and crazy as you can be, and then you reel it down, reel it in.
Yeah.
Joe, like, have you ever had something that you've wanted to be in your past that never really came to fruition?
I find that over the years, especially once I got to college, I've been sort of on two sides of the aisle. One side is what I want to do, and the other side, which is like entertainment, like be funny, entertain people, do like create content. And the other is what I think I should do, like go into business, maybe be a lawyer, something successful. And so I took business classes in college, and I'm like, this is what I should do. And I thought it was, you know, some of it was interesting, some of it was challenging. And I also was working at Disneyland at the time as a Jungle Cruise skipper. And I was like, this is what I want to do, though. And I was doing comedy and I was entertaining people, but I was like, but eventually this has to end, because what I should do is different than what I want to do. And I was trying to reconcile that. And I was like, maybe there's a way to bridge them. And eventually I found myself in recruiting. Like, I was like a headhunter, and I made it all the way up to the executive like position of that. So I was really high up, and I was like, well, this is what I should do. And but it didn't really work out. And I was like, I don't want to do it, though. So now I'm doing the podcast, which is and creating content elsewhere. And that's what I want to do. So I think that's what I should do.
You definitely see a line between what you want to do and what you feel you should do. You're making a distinction there.
Well, in the past, I have. Now there's less of a line. I think in the past, I saw more of a difference.
How does your rap career fit into that, by the way, Joe?
I don't have a rap career. several days ago, one of the members of the Discord, Ken, kind of jokingly suggested we make a rap album, and we made like a couple songs, and I thought they turned out really good.
He raps mainly about luggage.
And I showed them, so I showed them to people, and then the people I showed them to are like, oh, that's really good. And so I kind of been teasing the idea of having a rap career, so to speak.
Do you think you've identified your calling?
To be a rapper. Yeah. Joe, by the way, when you said you got some positive feedback, I think some of the members of the Discord might be saying, oh, yeah, this is great.
Well, I'm not talking about the Discord.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, like, people on here will cheer whatever we do, but...
I'm, you know, my, like... And, you know, your like, my dad said it was good, my uncle said it was good, you know, my grandparents, as well as coworkers.
No, that's actually interesting, though, because, like, I found that I don't trust my friends and family members' opinions on my work at all.
No.
Like, to get an actual serious question or topic out of this.
No.
I feel like getting strangers' advice and feedback is much, much more important for the content
right,
creation.
They have an objective vantage point.
I've also gotten strangers' feedback on it. They say it's pretty good.
Okay, Joe. Now, well, would you guys say that you've found a similar experience in your content, by the way?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's funny because when we were producing this track for Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo and the video as well, I always try to get feedback from people that I don't know too well. You know, I usually get like really positive feedback from people I know, and that doesn't sit with me. Like, I need criticism. I need an objective viewpoint, someone who can say, yeah, it's all right, but you've got to change this and this doesn't work. Whereas right. people who are close to you tend to be like, yeah, that's great. This is really good. And that's not helpful. It's,
right.
it's lovely, but it's you need constructive yeah. criticism.
Yeah, I do like yeah. it when people are like, yeah, everything you do is great. We're your fans. Yay. yeah. But it's not particularly yeah. helpful. Like, it's nice for the ego, but it's kind of the wrong nice. But yeah.
Right. So you've got a similar experience.
Yeah.
It's somebody in the Discord said, this is why I have that one rude and honest friend. I think there's real utility in, and you can't always do this, I guess, but it's useful to have people around you. And Nick, I think you have some of these, and I especially have my sister, having people who are close to you, but also know how much you value constructive criticism. And yes. I'll do a design. I do a lot of design stuff, and I'll share something with my sister, and she'll go, yeah, no, that's garbage. That doesn't work. I'll be like, wait, why? Because I worked the whole day on this. What do you mean? She'll be like, well, okay, look, this is, it's just, it doesn't, I don't think it works very well in this context. It doesn't grab me very well. And I go, oh yeah, no, I can see what you're saying. So it's nice to have someone who's close enough to me to know what I actually value hearing from them.
Right.
And then the one other comment I have is that other people tend to describe their families and stuff being sort of unfailingly supportive. My family has never had a whole lot of interest in what I do, like from the time I was very, very mm-hmm. young. So that's never been a problem for me, thinking that they'll just be like, oh yeah, this is great. When they, like my dad might just be like, oh yeah, okay. When is it done? And my brother just doesn't know really what to say to me most of the time. So I'm very grateful for the friendships I have that are able to provide some of that useful feedback, like you were saying, Nick.
Yeah, because when I was making stuff when I was a kid, like I'd make mm-hmm. tunes and I'd make things with 3D Movie Maker, which is actually another amazing CD-ROM game from the 90s.
Yeah.
I would show these creations to my parents, and unfailingly, my mother would love them all the time. My dad's reaction to everything was always, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
and,
interesting.
You know, as a child, I never really understood, like, what do you mean, what am I going to do? Like, I've made this because I felt like making it, and it was an amazing experience. But he was always looking at it from the perspective of, where is this going to go? How is this going to manifest? What's it going to accomplish? And I hate to say that's kind of creeping into my own psyche as I'm getting older.
Sure.
But it's not the dominant voice. Like, I do think more about, what is my long-term goal with this? How can I track my metrics on this? But at the same time, you know, you, Tim, did this, I imagine, because you felt it was necessary. Like, the cosmos was calling to you to make this happen.
eventually, there was a pragmatic angle to it early on too, because I saw my peers, like I said, I was 20, and I saw my peers accepting what I saw as kind of dead end jobs, all working at coffee shops or, you know, these little gig economy things, which is fine. But I was like, okay, wait a second. I actually am interested in doing something with greater, like, pragmatic longevity. You know, I was interested in pursuing some kind of career of my own making, that had really cool implications into the future. And honestly, that the feeling of like, oh shit, I was chosen to do this, that came later when it really started to take off. And I was like, oh man, this is so obviously not about me anymore. Like, I've been placed in this bizarre, really amazing position of helping out George and all these people who get to hear this music for the first time. And now that's a lot of what pushes me forward, is knowing, feeling really strongly inside that, like, yeah, this is so much bigger than me. And
you kind of have a duty to it.
Yeah, there's kind of a duty to it. There's a duty, but then also being in this, there's a third piece that's being in a flow of inspiration and seeing that, like, oh wow, like, Nick wants to make a track with this, and how can I help with that? And not just like, okay, I have to get up in the morning and do this because it's my responsibility, but like, wow, there's something trying to happen here, and I can help it do that. Like, I don't want to be in the way, you know. And clearly something is being asked of me, so let's just go for it. And that's been really fun. Does any of that make any sense? That was kind of rambly.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever feel like you're
absolutely,
like, in a RPG, and you are, like, you come across the character that's like, I've been waiting for somebody to, you know, do something with this music. I've got these CDs, right? I don't know what to do with them. And then, like, and you're just kind of like going through it, waiting for the next part of it to line up. Like, it's like effortlessly.
Well, yeah, a little bit. In fact, my friend Wilder, who went to bed, he was in the chat a little while ago, but his name's Abram. He used to call them my subquests. Cause I do stuff like that all the time. I'll help out random people with stuff in my non-curator life. I remember, I think that term was coined when I told him about meeting this woman who was, I think, like, Iranian, didn't speak any English, and was trying to figure out the bus schedule in Portland when I was living there. And so I had this big diversion, and I had the time to do this at the time. I wound up going home with her and making sure she got home to her husband and stuff. And he was like, oh yeah, another one of your subquests. So I do. There is this feeling of being guided along a quest in this curator thing. And I can't wait to see where it goes.
Life truly is a role-playing game. Joe.
Yeah.
Do you think we should have some people come on to give a live question?
Oh, I don't know. Would that be okay with you guys?
Sure.
Sure, man. Yeah. I think people have been wonderful enough to tune in and give us their time. So I think let's take some questions.
Okay.
I think we had a couple people identified ahead of time.
Well, sure. Let's just see how it goes. a couple people identified ahead of time that we wanted to make sure got a chance to ask a question or just say hello. One of them is a person named Atlas Geneticist. And Atlas, you're unmuted.
Hello. I'm here now.
Hey.
Hey.
Howdy.
Hey, I got a question to ask, and it's after Putt-Putt, after, say, Simpsons, even Skyrim, what do you think's next? Like, do you have any ideas for, like, something in the future? What's next?
Oh, geez. I think a big goal of mine is to tour. In fact, there may be an opportunity to tour Canada soon, and then possibly Europe. I can actually be back in the US around late 2021, 2022. And I think that would be just an amazing time to tour America again. Last time it was just the most incredible experience. I think in terms of studio stuff, I really want to do something. I have to finish the Skyrim video. Skyrim has to be complete. It's this 5.5 minute track of just nothing but sounds from the game. But the video is just, I was so naive in thinking that I could actually do this on my own. So I'm reaching out to a couple of friends of mine at the moment who are going to help me capture the footage from the game that I need. It's not just a case of capturing footage. You actually have to create all the shots in Skyrim, change the lighting conditions, change the weather, change the camera angle, change the depth of field. You know, it takes like 10 minutes to set up one shot up. It's a disaster. Skyrim is the next big one for me. But I think I'm always trying to think bigger. And I think touring is definitely something I want to do some more of. Yeah.
We actually interviewed the creator of Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, we did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
VJ Lakshman.
Wow.
Yeah. Bit of a flex, I know, but still.
That's great.
Okay. I'm going to have another individual come on who you guys may be familiar with. His name is One Simple Gamer. One Simple Gamer, you're on.
Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Hello.
So obviously the question's for Nick. So I just want to know, obviously. Since he's collaborated with a lot of talented musicians and video editors, my question was just like, what was the best experience he had collabing with anyone? And is there anyone he wishes to collab with in the future?
One Simple Gamer, can you not eat while we're doing the podcast, bud?
Sorry, man, I'm just really hungry right now.
You come on our podcast and you crunch on granola.
What are you eating, granola?
Somebody mute this man.
Are you going to ask a question or are you going to eat granola?
All right. Go ahead and die.
I owe so much of my success to actually the first guy I worked with, which was Brian Randall, and he really made the whole thing with Disney possible.
Wow.
He was actually a DJ at the time, and he negotiated the deals. He was in there at the studios making everything happen. So he was probably the first real big collaboration I had.
Wow.
I've also worked a lot with Gold Pick Pick Carrots. He's got a YouTube channel. He's an extremely talented video editor. And, you know, when I've been feeling really down and I can't get the creative juices flowing, he's just made a lot of video edits for me. And he did the Monsters, Inc. remix video, which was spectacular. And One Simple Gamer, actually, he produced the Reach video on the Pogo channel as well.
Oh.
So, he's a super talented guy. And I'm extremely grateful to be surrounded by so many talented people. I think you really have to be if you're going to try and make a name for yourself. You need to lean on people and you need their talents and their support. Someone I'd like to collaborate with is actually the guy who very first inspired me, who was Akifin.
Yeah.
People who've been following Pogo for a while have heard me bang on and on about this guy.
Yes.
But he, when you listen to one of his songs, it's like a demon's possessed your radio. Because his whole track is comprised of nothing but sound effects from this old radio tuner,
yeah,
including all the fuzz and all of the static. And he composes these melodies like this, and it's just the most amazing sound. And I thought, I have to try something like this. So I owe so much inspiration to Akifin. If I ever get the opportunity to collaborate with him one day, it would just be the most incredible life experience.
Yeah, we actually talked about Akifin on the last episode with you as well. And I thought the track that he did called Late Night Munchies was so cool that I titled the name of the episode Late Night Munchies with Pogo because of that. Yeah,
that's right.
I'll have to check this guy out. Yeah. I have not heard him.
If you like Pogo, you will like him. It's not the same, but it's like you can obviously hear Nick's inspirations in it.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely.
By the way, just to be clear, that granola thing, that was actually a bit a couple hours before the episode. OSG was on the voice chat. We were just kind of hanging out and he had a bag of granola. So we just thought we would like. Well, did have one more person we wanted to get on live for sure.
Okay.
And his name is, well, on Discord, it's Fatty.
Hey.
The Fat Man, you're unmuted.
Hey, is it working?
Can you hear me? Hey, George.
Hey, you guys.
Hi, George.
I'm a huge fan, and you know, it's a great opportunity to go on and on about, you know, how I've been you know, working at Game Audio longer than most of you guys have been alive. And I've met a lot of great, you know, I'm qualified, you know, great artists and great achievers and things like that. And Nick has, you know, you've got all the earmarks of one of the greats, and the stuff that you're doing is trailblazing, really. And the main thing that really marks it, he's a hard worker, man. He's, I mean, if I think about sitting down at the computer and working that hard on, you know, what's basically ridiculous. I mean, it's so close to your hypotheticals, you know, it's a useless superpower.
Sure.
But it's really turned into a thing, and it's really beautiful, and it makes the world a better place. I just wanted to say that.
Wow. Thanks, George. Jeez. Thanks, man. That means a lot. I don't know. I wouldn't say I have good work ethic, so I think I need to cut down on the Red Dead Redemption a lot. that is an addictive game.
Oh, it's great stuff.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm just trying the best I can. It's actually really difficult because you don't feel it every day, as I'm sure you know, and I'm sure everybody knows. You know, some days you just don't feel it, but you know that this is what you've got to do, so you just got to hit the grindstone and make it happen. And
yeah,
I find that extremely difficult. Do you guys find that when you work, like, does anyone here, you guys kind of do this from home, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that helpful, or do you feel like you need a studio space or an office outside of your home environment to go to?
Oh, dude, I'd love an office. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so the great. Second this starts making enough money that we can justify it, yeah, we're getting a studio office for sure.
Yeah.
I just find it hard to work at home sometimes because there's so many damn distractions everywhere.
Yeah. That's true.
I had years where I would work. Well, yeah, it was tough for a long time because I was pretty broke doing a lot of this stuff for a long time. And I would work till late in the night on putt-putt stuff and then sleep in my sleeping bag under my desk in my room. And I was in there all the time. I had a pretty small room, and I ate and slept and played and worked in there all day, every day for a long time. I'm just saying I'm familiar with like the most extreme of that kind of confinement and the distractions capable in that space. I think having a separate workspace is a very valuable thing.
Do you have an actual question for him?
My question was, do you have kids?
No, man, not yet. I'm still practicing.
All right. in that case, why am I picturing that? No, that's too far.
I'm still in training, man. I'm still a young, stupid kid. I've got a lot more to learn before I can have kids. So, still practicing the ways.
Yeah.
My final thought, when you've got kids in the house, it's good to have a separate workspace for me. It just worked out that way. I love the kids, but they want FaceTime that they deserve, and you don't want to split your attention that way. When you don't have kids, I like the short commute. I like to roll out of bed, brush my teeth, and sit down at the machine. And that's my take.
That makes sense.
So it's not black and white, really, is it? It's like ups and downs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Timothy? Have you got any mini Tims in the world?
No. That's an interesting idea, but no, likewise, I'm just in training mode.
That's your next project.
Practicing as well.
Just in training. No, I mean, honestly, like, I don't think I can convey how much this, because it's such a weird project to have been working on, but releasing this music, this has been my kid for so long, watching it grow up and nurturing it as necessary and learning how to lead it along. It's really, it's been pretty surreal and also just something I've been grateful to be a part of for so long. So no, once this is more mature, maybe I'll consider some mini Tims, if that's what the world needs.
You're still practicing.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Like all of us.
think all four of us are practitioners. We do not have any kids. How depressing.
Yeah. Nah, I think we're in a pretty good position. I think we're doing okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty glad I don't have kids yet, to be honest. But, yeah.
Oh, by the way.
Okay.
By the way, Pogo, in the chat, somebody is asking, what is your opinion on boars? Like the animal?
What?
Boars?
Yeah, boars.
I didn't see that.
It was earlier.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was interested in the answer to that question.
It concerns the server. It's like a server-wide question.
How do you feel about boars?
You mean like the pig?
Yeah, like the pig. Like Pumbaa.
Pumbaa's a boar.
Well, pork ribs are amazing. That's all I need to say.
They're amazing.
Exactly. Okay. Tim, what about you?
Yeah. Write that down.
I lived in Hawaii for a while on the Big Island, and I had a friend who was so badass. He used to be a meth head, but he was jacked, and he would go into the jungle with a knife. He did this at least once and just kill a wild boar shirtless with his bare hands.
Really?
Boars are cool, but that guy was cooler.
With his boar hands?
Yeah.
With his boar hands?
He was amazing. He had a Betty Boop tattoo on his back.
Weird.
I don't know.
It's like the whole size of the back. It was like a little one.
No, it was a little one. It was like maybe the size of, I don't know, like a tangerine.
The size of an atom?
No.
Oh, it's tangerine.
Right. Tangerine, actually.
Someone who was really, really hoping to get a voice question, can you type it in the chat? And then let's take one of the good ones. Oh, no. I have a really good one from, I think his name is Efrio or Efrio.
Okay.
And I'm going to go ahead and read it as if I was him.
Okay, yeah, it's well stated.
As someone who is slowly, I don't want to do a voice, never mind. Okay. As someone who's slowly learning the ins and outs of producing, I've come to terms with the fact that there's always a terrible point in the creative process where you realize something isn't working. What do you do to decide how to cross that creative threshold, to change parts of it, or to start all over again?
Well, I was talking earlier about this book by Stephen Pressfield called The War of Art, and he's an extraordinarily successful author, but his first, I think it was 5 screenplays and first 6 books flopped horribly. And I think the takeaway from that is resistance comes in a lot of forms, and one of those forms is failure. And, are you going to let it beat you, or are you going to keep fighting it? I'm not really sure what he means when he says he's not sure that he feels something's not working. What do you guys, how do you interpret that?
I interpreted that as him running into like a roadblock, like not quite figuring out how to finish off a track to make it sound good, or getting to like a point in the plot of a book, or something like that. It's like, this isn't, I was doing really well, but I'm stuck.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with Timbaland, the producer.
Of course.
Hugely successful dude.
Yeah, he was in everything for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I watched a video of his yesterday. He said that you have to look at it as like an argument. Some days it's just not going to happen, so you've got to just walk away and come away another day. And I think that's kind of a good approach. I think the secret is not to get too attached to what you're doing. Like, you don't want to over identify with what you're creating. Like, I am a music producer, this music is me. That's when you get really paralyzed, I think, and when you do fail, it cripples you emotionally. And you get really frustrated that it's not happening. I don't think that's what you want to do. You just want to treat it as like it's your profession. It's what you've decided to do professionally. And if it's working really well, fantastic. Thank the muse for it. If it's not working well, that's cool. That's fine. That's just part of the process. You just got to keep putting in the hours, and eventually inspiration will come. I think, it's like you're getting tested to see how committed to this you are. And the more hours you spend in there, the more likely it is inspiration will hit and something magic will happen.
Yeah.
Solid answer. Yeah.
Well,
can I add something to that too?
No. Go ahead. Yeah. No. It's fine.
Just sing over me or something. No, I think a methodology for not identifying too closely with the product of your creativity is to diversify your portfolio as much as is reasonable. Like, it really helped me step away from the music of Humongous Entertainment has to be a success. This project has to be a success. Once I started like lifting weights and writing more and having other things in my life that I could see my own progression in, that I could, you know, invest myself in alongside this thing. It just was so natural that way that it was like, okay, now if one of these fails, I know I'm not a failure because I've got this other cool thing over here going on as well. I think that's as obvious as that may be to plenty of people. I didn't know that for a long time. And I think it's a really important thing to keep in mind.
Yeah. And you mustn't be afraid to lean on other people's ideas as an artist either. I think it was Picasso that said, good artists borrow, great artists steal.
Yeah.
And, you know, we live in the sort of delusion where everything has to be original. You have to sit down and grind this completely unique thing out. I don't think it works that way ever.
Yeah.
I think you hear something or see something and you feel like you have to do something like it. You know, like we're talking about sample music here, like it's derivative by nature.
Yeah.
So if you're struggling with inspiration, get on Spotify, get on Amazon Music, get on anything that gives you loads of good music to get inspired by. You know, surround yourself with ideas. Don't be afraid to sample them or to reinterpret them. That's like your job as an artist is to bring order from chaos and to draw things from other things, you know.
That's interesting that you say good artists borrow, great artists steal. I'm actually something of a great artist myself. Some of my well-known works are Alice, Wishery, Grow Fonder, Forget.
Wait, are you just naming Pogo tracks?
What
right
I like.
That's what he's doing.
These are some of my, by Pogo. These are some of my great works.
I don't know, man. It's all starting to sound a bit samey.
Oh, Nick. Hey, I wanted to mention, too. I just got way into listening to Don't Wish recently, which I think is a masterpiece. The thing is amazing.
Oh, thanks, man. If you say so.
It's just beautiful. It's beautiful. All right, guys. Are we ready to premiere his track by any chance? Just checking.
Yeah, I think it's getting to that
point.
Don't
we,
I do want to go ahead
do that
and
another night.
Plug. Yeah, see you guys next week
in
for the episode with let's go ahead and give out the information before we premiere the track for how everyone can get in touch with everyone in terms of like checking out their stuff. And I'm gonna do kind of like round robin here. Nick, starting with you, if people wanted to check out your stuff, how would they go about doing that?
I suppose the best way is on YouTube. I think the channel is youtube.com/pogo/c/pogo. Sometimes there's a few previews that go up on official Pogo on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the best places.
Okay. And Tim, the curator, what's the best way to find out more about the curator project?
Follow us on Kickstarter. That's a really great way to follow the Kickstarter itself. I think we're Look for Curator over there. We're definitely Look for Curator on Twitter and on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Those are great places to keep in touch with us as well. And we have a YouTube channel, which is just Curator.
I'll go ahead and put a link to all that in the description, by the way. So
you betcha.
People can check it out. We'll also, approximately when can people look forward to the video for the track that we're going to be debuting?
Oh yeah, good question. Nick, you think...
What do you think, Timothy?
It could be ballpark.
Yeah, I'm going to... definitely in the next week. Today is... Wednesday? I would say by this weekend. By Saturday or Sunday. Does that sound reasonable to you, Nick?
Yeah, it sounds very reasonable, yeah. Can't wait, man.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, I may rush to get this out then. So,
okay,
Okay, and Joe, if people wanted to tune into our show, they already are, so they don't need to worry about that.
If you like what you've been listening to and you want to support us and help us grow, go to patreon.com/t1podcast. Other than that, our website is t1podcast.com.
And why would someone want to check out our Patreon, Joe?
Well, I mean, they could support their content creators, you know, help them grow. It does allow
Joe,
them...
can you say this as if you're not, like, castrated? Right. Can you, like, put a little bit of excitement into this?
Well, Lars, the reason they would check out the Patreon is because it gives them early listening privileges, allowing them to listen to the episodes as soon as they are done being edited, which could be weeks before the episode's out.
Yeah.
It also gives them special privileges in the Discord, you know, such as the ability to change their name, and they're better than the rest of the users.
Yeah, you are our favorite members of the Discord. You're our favorite fans. Yeah, you can get early listening privileges. You get to hang out with us in the patron only chat. You get a special role in the Discord. You get a bunch of other cool stuff. That's all for only $2 a month.
We also sell merch at merch.t1podcast.com.
Yeah, guys, we got a merch store now. Go ahead and check that out. You get some t-shirts, you get some sweaters, you get some mugs, you get some posters, you get a lot of cool stuff. Teespring is coming out with a lot of cool products right now, and we're taking advantage of that. The chat is saying, I thought this was going to go adless. Well,
this isn't an ad. This is just you supporting your content creators who you listen to.
Exactly.
It's not an ad.
That's patreon.com/T1podcast if you want to check that out. And also, if you wanted to listen to more episodes of the show with people like Call Me Carson and the creator of Elder Scrolls, like we talked about before.
Senor Palo, Kneecaps,
and a bunch of other cool people as well.
Creator of
Cards Against Humanity. Go to t1podcast.com to check out more of them. And I think, thanks to the patient audience, that we may want to go ahead and bust out that track now if you guys are ready.
Yeah, man.
All right. Yeah, hey, I'm feeling ready. I'm sure everyone else is.
I'm going to go ahead and play it now, so enjoy.
I can almost see the zoo from here.
I wonder where I'll find the first fine zoo. I wonder where I'll find the...
There are four roos.
I wonder where I'll find the first fine...
Duck.
This is the most amazing zoo I've seen in my whole life.
But
I put round a little
old never been with but
I am again.
You see my
out back out
but Bobby's
but
they all
old
never been with but
I
hope I don't wish. Come on, Pep!
Pop up save the zoo.
Misses her.
Pop up save the zoo. Pop up save the zoo.
Misses her.
Oh, once
Uncle Put better.
I hope she's old so I can go.
Sure wish
Uncle Put better.
You're going.
Misses her.
Oh, once
Uncle Put better.
I hope she's old so I can go.
Sure wish
Uncle Put better.
You're going.
I wonder where I'll find the first
five.
I wonder where I'll find the
there are four
roos. I wonder where I'll find the first
fine eye.
I wonder where I'll find the first
and
roos.
Put
I put round a little
old never been away.
Put I am again.
You see my
out back out.
Put Bobby's
but
they all
old never been away.
Put
I
roos.
This place is beautiful.
Better.
I hope she's old so I can go.
Sure wish
Uncle Put better.
Welcome to the zoo.